Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, there's been a lot of loud, annoying, clamoring, clanging liberal voices already in this campaign season, and that's with the president having no competition on his side of the aisle prior to convention season. But they obviously see that he's vulnerable, and so there's a lot of people barking out there from MSNBC to the liberal blogosphere. But one that's been not quite as belligerent and outspoken as usual, and that's a good thing, is MoveOn.org, which really came of age in its opposition and hatred of President Bush and the Iraq War. But you've done quite a bit of digging here and found out why these folks are a little bit less vociferous than usual.
I'm not sure they're any less vociferous. They just don't have as much pull as they used to, or as much political power as they do. They're probably every bit as angry and furious. And just to backtrack, this is a classic example of an organization that gets formed with a mission in mind, accomplishes the mission, and then needs a new purpose, and then just finds new purposes and just constantly evolves and cannot ever say, okay, job done, time to go home. And yes, it was very vocal and active during the Bush years, but the name MoveOn.org came from opposition to the impeachment of President Clinton. They were founded in 1998 and saying, this is too much. We don't care about him having sex with Monica Lewinsky. We don't care about him lying under oath. It's time to move on. And that's what they originally formed for. Now, they formed a political action committee in the 2004 cycle. And it was definitely one of the bigger movers and shakers in that. You know, every one of these years, they've done generally in the neighborhood of $30 million to $40 million. But they sent out everybody sends out fundraising messages. I get a bunch of these or forwarded to them by readers. And there was a particular desperation to the tone of this one. And it specifically said that unless they got a lot of new donations, they weren't going to be able to have much of an impact in Wisconsin. They weren't going to be able to help Elizabeth Warren up in Massachusetts. And they weren't going to be able to fight Republican efforts to oppress the vote through requiring people to have photo IDs, et cetera, et cetera. And it seemed oddly specific for a please give money message. By the way, National Review Online is having a fundraising campaign on our homepage. So while we're on that topic, so I know something about desperate sounding tones in fundraising messages. But this seemed oddly specific. You don't usually hear people saying, well, unless we get money, we won't be able to do X, Y, and Z. So I decided to look into the FEC filings. The most recent numbers are at March 31st, 2012. So it's possible in the last 2.5 months things have changed dramatically, but it's unlikely. And basically they've raised $9 million since January 2011. So 15 months, $9 million. They've spent $10.5 million, and if you're thinking, aha, deficit spending, they had some money left over from the year before. They have about a little under $3 million left cash on hand. But this is way behind what they usually have at this point in the cycle. Last cycle, they had more than $18 million. Before that, $14 million, $11 million. And the first year they got founded, at this point, they had only about $3 million. So but that was the first time they were getting, just setting up and establishing their fundraising base, et cetera, et cetera. So the bottom line is, yes, MoveOn.org really does have a lot less funding than they used to. And I think the other kind of interesting angles to this story are that there are indications that they just don't influence the way they used to. They got very active in a Democratic primary fight in a House race in Illinois. This was a safe Democratic district, and they had one of their former turnout directors running for Congress. And you look, if it's one of your people, they have to go to the mat. They have to go all out for this guy and only got about 12,000 votes in a Democratic primary. It was very disappointing for them. Then you couple the fact their latest shtick is to fly planes over Romney events with anti-Romney messages. They genuinely claim, Greg, that this will drive Romney and his millionaire backers crazy. Now, you and I are not millionaire backers of Romney, but have the MoveOn.org planes driven you crazy, Greg?
Not yet.
Are the streets filled with people going, people flying off the handle and going insane because of these planes?
Not so
far.
Is
this the very first you've heard of MoveOn.org flying planes over Romney events?
Yes.
So no one's noticed. These planes don't rent themselves. There's kind of this flailing desperation in some of their tactics. And I figure that if you are a liberal donor, besides the Obama campaign knocking on your door every 5 minutes and asking for money, you've got a lot of options as a liberal donor. And I think MoveOn.org is just steadily declining as a being seen as a viable and useful tool to advance the liberal agenda. So as someone who has never particularly liked this group, I applaud this. Yes, I did reach out to them for comment. They completely ignored me, and that's fine. I think that kind of acts as a verification of how bad their fundraising problems are. This is all on NRO.com. And the idea of a world in which MoveOn.org is not there sounds super duper terrific. The next best thing would be one in which they are irrelevant, and I think we are heading in that direction, Greg.
I would love to see that, and I applaud, since we disagree with them on virtually everything, if not everything, that they're using such completely ineffective tactics. I love the plain idea, which are basically reserved for advertising bars and carrying out really bad marriage proposals most of the time.
Eat at Joe's, yes, exactly.
So if that's the extent of their campaigning, then I'm all for that. On to martini number two now. And Jim, this used to be the wholly owned subsidiary of the Middle East, given the whole Libya debacle last year for day after day after day. And now, unfortunately, it hits even closer to home because of ongoing bad economic news. The latest numbers are out from the weekly jobless claims. And in the past week, 386,000 people filing jobless claims for the first time. That's up 6,000. Last week, it had ticked down briefly after a full month of week by week going up. We're still dangerously close to that 400,000 mark. And we're also finding out now that for the first time in over 2 years, the year-over-year foreclosure rate up after it had been in decline. And in Obama's home state of Illinois, it's up almost 30%. So just when he tries to keep claiming these fundraisers that everything's the Republicans' fault and that he's really the fiscally responsible one, more and more the facts are drowning out his desperate attempts to change our attention and change our minds.
The metaphor I keep describing for the economy under for most of the Obama years is bouncing along the bottom. The idea that, no, you're right, we're not losing tons of jobs each month. We are creating them at this, you know, very slight incline, this very incremental pattern, generally most months not enough to keep up with the general rate of population increase. This really does start to feel like a slowdown. And traditionally, when you have a recession, you jump out of it. You have at least, you know, at least a year of really good, solid economic growth, and we have not gotten that. The idea of either another slowdown or another actual recession on top of this, as much as this would, you know, effectively doom the Obama presidency, it just strikes me as, you know, problem upon problem. The numbers we discussed earlier this week about how much the middle class had lost ground, basically 2 decades worth of gains wiped out by the Great Recession. The economic news is bleak and getting bleaker. And I think, you know, I think there are a whole bunch of folks who believe that nothing is really going to be done at a governmental level to change this trend until, you know, some new president gets in there in January.
On to our third martini now, Jim. And just last week, Dan Foster and I were regaling in the wisdom of Mayor Bloomberg and his crackdown on the real scourge in New York City. And that soda's bigger than 16 ounces. But apparently that and salt and smoking in bars is just the tip of the iceberg. Now it's popcorn and milk. Jim, I don't smoke. I don't drink a ton of soda. But now he's really cutting close to home, and this has got to be where it stops, right?
Greg, I kind of marvel. First of all, I'm glad somebody's out there to save our kids from the nefarious menace of milk. Remember when that was good for you? Yeah, I understand. It's healthier to drink
skin. Does a body good, right?
So we have that angle. One of the interesting things that came here was that, you know, the idea of there was something class-based about the whole attack on soda, that you notice that venti lattes and frappuccinos were not covered by this under Bloomberg's suggestion because, one, Bloomberg likes that. And two, I think it's safe to say that wealthy liberals like those things. Perhaps you'll see some working class folks enjoying their frappuccinos, but generally, you know, you look in there, you see white professionals in Starbucks. And if you're a white liberal elite mayor, you don't want to irritate your base, which is white liberal elites. This stuff, I mean, you know, does Bloomberg eat popcorn in the movies? You know, I don't eat a ton, but like, the idea that this is going to branch into foods that other demographics like indicates, one, it's always a slippery slope with these people. They never are satisfied. You cannot let the camel get its nose under the tent. And then the second, but I understand camel they'll be banning next, Greg. It's too unhealthy, too fatty, the tissue there.
That's right.
There's already been this big backlash. Over in Politico, they had a pretty good story that basically said, where it really kind of hits people in their bones, or I guess say their stomachs, something like drone warfare can seem very abstract, but the TSA fueling you up, that's something that's very visceral and they feel this. Well, going after other foods indicates that these people are just control freaks who basically demand to control every personal decision. There is no zone of privacy with these people. The personal is political. And they need to be thrown out of government wherever, in any way possible.
I don't know whether Bloomberg is planning on running for a fourth term, but you keep going down this road, we're going to be stuck with like tofu and health shakes, and even in
you know, like this dystopian THX 1138, you know, Brave New World, you know, food pouches.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Jim, have a big tub of buttered popcorn on me. We'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.